good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine just what the future will bring. Now, we want to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues. And if you would like to call in, call after the half hour at 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME, 1-800-5-825-5528. Well, our special guest this afternoon is Joe Ashapinti, and Mr. Ashapinti was an INS agent for, I believe, 21 years. He was the most highly decorated INS agent, and he was dealing with drugs. And for a number of years in the New York area, he was breaking case after case. Some of the largest drug busts in all history were actually brought about by Joe. And then, because he was doing such a good job, he was actually targeted by the Dominican drug cartel. But the interesting thing is, that there were people within our government who wanted to convict Joe Ashapinti. And so using a problem as far as the judge was concerned and an incompetent lawyer who had a nervous breakdown during the trial, and they wouldn't allow any other legal counsel, Joe was convicted and sent to prison and eventually was given executive clemency by George Bush. And now he's been out trying to actually clear his name, but the amazing things are the things that he is finding out as he begins looking behind the scenes and behind the shroud of secrecy as to what's really going on as far as the drug traffic here in the United States. Joe, it's good to have you with us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you give our listeners just your story of what happened, and then we'll try to get into the background of what's really happening with drugs today.
First, it's important to understand the people that I was investigating. I was investigating Dominican organized crime, which basically distributes throughout the United States drugs for the Colombian cartel. They basically are the street distributors. And unfortunately, what's happened in America is there's been a serious increase of these ethnic organized crime groups. And because of the fact that this particular drug cartel that I was looking at was implicated in the murder of a police officer, I was formally asked to help in their investigation to solve the homicide. This occurred in 1988 when New York City police officer Michael Bushak was murdered. And what I learned was that this drug cartel I was investigating was very sophisticated, to the extent that in the Dominican Republic, where it's a very poor country, the cartel would basically go out and recruit young children in the fine art of drug trafficking activity, actually train them in camps, and once they're ready and graduate, they were ready to be smuggled into the United States, and in fact were smuggled into the United States in a variety of ways. One, without inspection through the Mexican and Canadian border. In many cases, they came in by boat, without inspection through Puerto Rico and Miami, and in many instances they obtained United States passports and other types of fraudulent documents, and they came in through ports of entry, major airports. And what I learned was, once they were established in the United States in the drug trade, they would eventually get, by fraud, a permanent resident status, or what many Americans hear daily is green cards. And they generally would get that by the cartel paying off a United States citizen woman to marry the illegal alien. So I basically was getting very close to the cartel and to the major and to this particular drug lord. I was becoming a viable threat to him so much. Not only did I arrest him twice, but I arrested his mother, his brother, his sister, as well as had many of his locations where he was operating investigated, which resulted in several types of contraband seizures. So I was getting very, very close to the cartel. Really, I think where my problem started was when one of the paralegals working in a law office in New York voluntarily came forward and provided me with information on the drug cartel. What she revealed was her employers, who were two attorneys, both of Dominican heritage, were in fact involved in the drug distribution. She further alleged that one of the attorneys was a former United States attorney, an assistant United States attorney, who worked in the Civil Rights Unit. And in fact, the drug cartel was holding private sex and drug parties for many of his colleagues. Plagued with very, very serious allegations of alleged misconduct and corruption, you know, I went forward to my superiors, and basically they gave me the green light to start an investigation. And that investigation was called Project Esquire. But unfortunately, several weeks after, not only was the identity of the informant revealed through a leak in the U.S. Attorney's Office, but I was told by the chief of the criminal division of the U.S. Attorney's Office that they could not, that they would not permit Project Esquire to go forward. Realizing that somebody was hampering the effectiveness of my investigation, I still proceeded. I was able to convince the local prosecutor of the magnitude of the case and the operation, and he was convinced, and in fact assigned me three assistant district attorneys, one of which was John F. Kennedy Jr. So we proceeded, and eventually, when I realized that the drug cartel I was investigating was buying up Spanish grocery stores that were called bodegas, I started Operation Bodega. And that occurred in August of 1989. And within a 10-month period, Project Bodega became a highly viable multi-agency drug task force investigation, leading into seizures of all types of contraband, including narcotics, valued into the millions. And I realized I was getting close when all of a sudden three bribery overtures were made by the drug lords. And I immediately reported that to the FBI corruption unit, who I had worked in the past. And they, too, were convinced that I should follow through with these bribery overtures in hopes of rooting out corruption. But unfortunately, their investigation was similarly closed down, such as Project Esquire.
No, what you're saying is that somebody in key positions in government was closing down the investigations, not only on your part, but on the part of the FBI. In other words, they didn't want them looking and to find out too much about who was actually pushing drugs there in New York?
That is correct. And in fact...
All right, we're going to have to interrupt you right there because I hate to do it, but unfortunately we can't stop the clock. So I want to tell our listeners about some of the items we have here at Radio Liberty, which we think you should give serious consideration to getting so you can become informed about the forces working behind the scenes. Certainly, if you haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, which will take you into the background of the politics of AIDS within the California Medical Association, within the White House, within the Centers for Disease Control, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic is the only book that really takes you behind the shroud of secrecy and reveals the fact that despite all the money we're spending, about $20 billion, billion dollars a year in America, we're not trying to stop the epidemic. We're monitoring the epidemic not today, but 10 years ago, because we monitor AIDS. The other information we have on the AIDS epidemic, my book called A Nation Deceived and Betrayed, dealing with all the myths and the fact that most of what you're told about the epidemic just is not true, our video entitled AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. You can call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you a free copy of the newsletter. You need to become involved. We have a new four-tape kit. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Joe Serpenti, and he has been telling us that, first of all, his effort to get behind the corruption and the drug sales in New York, called Project Esquire, was called off by his superiors. And then, of course, the FBI investigation looking into the bribery charges and drug dealing. Somebody within government was calling off these investigations. And, of course, as the story unfolds, you may get some surprises. So go ahead, Joe. Please tell us more about the story. Uh-oh, we've lost Joe Serpenti. Would you please... Mary at the desk, would you give Joe a call Okay, fine. We're getting it back on the line. I don't know how that happened, but we'll be back in just a minute. Hopefully, we'll get him back on the line. But we've talked to Joe before. And, of course, what you find is that this goes to the various highest levels of the American government. We're fighting a massive war on drugs. Now, we have satellites up in the sky that can read the newspaper, literally, that you're reading as you're walking around or sitting on a park bench. They're able to read to see your face. They're able to actually make out the license plate on your car and track your car from satellite. But we can't win the drug war, and the question is why. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to lose you there, Joe. Go ahead with your story, please.
Well, basically, I knew I was getting close, and I was going to be stopped one way or another, but I never figured out the manner in which they would do it until April 4th, 1990. What occurred was the Dominican Federation, which has been proven to be the front for the Dominican cartel, held a press conference on the steps of City Hall. Present during the press conference was the former mayor, David Dinkins, who publicly came forward and denounced Project Bodega, called it a Republican conspiracy, saying that illegal aliens were now afraid to go food shopping, and that this was a conspiracy in order to sabotage the census so New York City couldn't get its fair share of the American dollar. I mean, clearly the mayor knew that that was not the case. He knew that this was a criminal investigation of a drug cartel implicated, which arose out of the murder of a New York City police officer. He had to have known it. His own district attorney had supported and was part of the operation. But nevertheless, Washington succumbed to the political pressure and ordered Project Bodega closed down that very same day. In addition, the mayor called for a federal civil rights investigation, and 10 months later, I became the only defendant and what they called a civil rights conspiracy to conduct the unlawful searches in these bodegas. When I saw the grand jury testimony, I was outraged because the people that testified were all portrayed to the jury as being law-abiding, not involved in any sort of type of criminal activity. It was clear that they perjured themselves. I knew that they had criminal history convictions, arrests, that they never revealed. In fact, they purged themselves to the grand jury. Well, I was basically mortified. A law enforcement officer now learning he's been indicted on 20-some-odd counts of federal civil rights violations. Well, I went to some of the Hispanic civil rights leaders in the community. And they knew over the years that I was pretty fair, and I went after the big guys. And one of the civil rights people, Dr. Angel Nunez from the National Hispanic Coalition, said, I'd like to personally examine this case. And he wanted the identity of every grocery store that me and my agents went on Project Bodega, which totaled approximately 50. And a few days later, he called me. He said, you know something? Something smells here. He says, about 40 of the people I interviewed said you did everything proper, that you got permission, and that you didn't violate anyone's rights. And the people who did, in fact, testify against you had a relationship. They were all part of the Dominican Federation, and many of them were relatives. So it was clear that I was being railroaded. And what hurt me so much was how the U.S. Attorney's Office, someone I had proudly served over 20 years, could even believe these allegations. And what's significant about my case was I became the first law enforcement officer ever in American history to have been criminally prosecuted for an allegation of an illegal search and seizure. That was my indictment. It was alleged that I conducted an illegal consent search. And what's really outrageous about it is that's why we had the exclusionary rule. It's not uncommon for a defense attorney to allege that the police officer's search, seizure, and arrest is unlawful. But generally, it's handled administratively. Well, the people in the community came to my aid, and several of them decided to help prove my innocence. And they went undercover. And they wore hidden tape recorders. And they went into every bodega whose owner testified against me. And on tape, they ended up buying all types of contraband. In fact, during one of those tapes, one of the principals is bragging how the judge in the case was pre-selected. So I took a look at the judge, and it was Judge Constance Motley Baker. During the 1950s, according to FBI records entered into the congressional record, she was a communist who was setting up in the black community many of these communist clubs on the school campuses. And during the 1960s, she was a very big political associate of Mayor David Dinkins and Congressman Charles Rangel and Percy Sutton. And I realized at that point that I had no chance in hell. She was someone who already made clear a bias against white police officers. So I knew I was getting railroaded and I wouldn't get a fair shake. What ultimately happened was I hired a lawyer because the judge, considering me a bail risk, someone likely to flee the community after 20-some-odd years of government service, decided to put a $100,000 lien on my home, and unfortunately unable to hire the services of, I think, a qualified lawyer, I had something like $11,000 or $12,000. I was able to hire one lawyer who agreed to take the case. To my amazement, a couple of weeks after I ended up hiring him, he reported to me that, in fact, he had a nervous breakdown. This was a couple of days before the trial. And we went to the judge, and this is a man who was a lawyer. He was close to 70, had practiced law for over 30 years, and he said, "Your Honor, I can't represent Mr. Acapinti. I've had a nervous breakdown. I'm ill." And she called him a liar. As we speak today, in the congressional record, we not only have the medical and hospitalization records of his illness, of his psychiatric problems, we also have a police report that showed he tried to commit suicide during the trial. In addition, we had a Supreme Court judge come forward who admit that he had a criminal case with this very same attorney who was talking about committing suicide. And it was clear to him that the man was ill, very ill. But nevertheless, I had to go through a six-week trial. And unfortunately, I never called any of the witnesses, many of the police officers who were on the searches. He failed my attorney to issue proper subpoenas. Unfortunately, he was a basket case. It wasn't uncommon to read in the court papers and in the transcripts how he would simply stand up, burst into tears, go to the wall, hit his head against the wall, go to people in the courtroom, ask them if they had Valium. The man was clearly ill. Well, I was convicted. Despite the fact that my case had nothing to do with police brutality, racial bias, or corruption. And as I told you, I became the first officer ever in American history. And the drug cartel not only got what they wanted in getting me out, but after that landmark conviction, in the New York and New Jersey area, the law enforcement community stopped all drug interdiction at major airports because they were afraid now that a police officer conducting good faith searches and seizures could go to prison. Well, I was indicted, railroaded to a conviction, and everyone said, "Joe, there's no way in hell that you can't beat the appeal. I mean, it's clear that your attorney was ill." So, a year later, I go before the Court of Appeals. And what happened was the Federation held a protest right in front of the courthouse. And they were threatening that if the Court of Appeals overturned my conviction, that they would riot, just like they did a week earlier, as they did in Rodney King in Los Angeles. And not only did they have the protesters outside of the courtroom, when my attorney took the podium to argue my case, they actually marched into the courtroom. 1 hour later, the Court of Appeals rendered a verdict upholding my conviction. It should be noted my appeal brief and appendix was in excess of 750 pages, physically impossible for the appeals court to actually absorb or read. Usually they take a month or so before rendering their decision. Well, I was ordered to be to sentenced 37 months in a federal jail. And on June 11th, I appeared before a national TV show because I had not been authorized prior to that. The judge put a gag order on me when she learned I went to 60 Minutes. And I went, and with my wife and my three daughters, I made a national plea for help. I asked that they contact the White House. And when the judge learned what I had done, she ordered the United States Marshals immediately to take me into custody. I was handcuffed with leg irons, body chains, and shackled, and placed in the general prison population, a place where legally they should have never put me. It was clear that I was not to come out of the prison system. Well,
you mean not to come out alive?
Well, it was so bad that my roommate ended up being a convicted Dominican drug dealer from Washington Heights. And again, my case had nothing to do with brutality, racial bias. It was all alleged that I conducted an illegal search. What the bad guy said, Mr. Acapinti searched and then asked us to sign a consent form, which wasn't the way it was. Now, what's important was the National Empowerment Television Network did a documentary last year in my case, and they interviewed the jury foreman, and they said, why did you find Acapinti guilty? And what he said was amazing. He says, we didn't understand the law. We were led to believe that an immigration official could not search for drugs, that his authority was simply limited to arresting an illegal alien, which is clearly not the law.
I'm going to have to interrupt you here because we've just come to the half-hour break, but we'll be back in just a moment or two with Joe Osipinti and this amazing story. And then, of course, what he's found is he's begun to look behind the scenes and try to find out why something like this would happen in America. Well, we want to mention some of the other books we have here at Radio Liberty. Certainly, we have a number of books on the New World Order because we're moving towards a world government. The whole idea is that we'll give up American national sovereignty and give up all of our freedom, and the world government will end all war. The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies by William Still, goes into secret societies that have been around a long time and have an objective and goal, world government. En Route to Global Occupation by Gary Kaw, The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw, Global Tyranny Step by Step by my good friend Bill Jasper. All of these books will begin to let you understand that if the American people don't speak out against the world army, and that's what Bosnia is all about, America is the policeman of the world, and the World Tax, and the World Health Organization, and all the other international organizations moving us towards the loss of freedom. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here in Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Joe Osipinti, going into the background of his criminal conviction for simply doing his job and trying to stop drugs in New York. And the question is, if we really wanted to stop drugs in New York, why would they have targeted and why would the government have gone along with this and then put him into a situation in prison where his life was literally in danger? And, of course, this would then act as a message to every other police officer. If you step out of line, you're going to get the same thing. In other words, if you start doing searches and you really are effective in trying to stop the flow of drugs, why, you may end up in prison just like Joe did. So if you'd like to call here, 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK at me, but why don't you go ahead with the story, Joe? Eventually they put you in prison. You received executive clemency. And what have you found since you've been out looking behind the scenes into what's really going on in America as far as the drug war is concerned?
Well, Congressman James Traficant came to my aid and started to do an in-depth investigation. And what he uncovered, not only by obtaining confidential documents, he learned that a month after I had been indicted by the United States Attorney, that the Drug Enforcement Administration approached the United States Attorney with evidence that they had made a gravest mistake, that in fact I was set up, and that the genesis of my conspiracy was the Dominican Federation and also another company that was linked to the drug cartel, a company called Seacrest Trading Company. And according to confidential documents that was obtained, We learned that the Drug Enforcement Administration was investigating this very same syndicate for being involved in over $550 million a year in money laundering activity only alone in Washington Heights of New York. And in this confidential DEA report, which was dated 11/2/94, they talked about their frustration and the fact that there was a special interest group that, in fact, was protecting the organization, hampering the law enforcement efforts and legislative efforts to put them out of business. And what I learned was that there were almost 8 federal and other local investigations into this very same crime syndicate. And in each and every case, their investigations were suspiciously terminated by the Justice Department.
Now, who was this special interest group, though?